from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you, and by support from the Central Indiana Community Foundation, the Indiana Arts Commission, a state agency, and by the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll meet Larry Swayze, the author of a new Western series.
Matt Sosi joins us for a look at the Ball State Theater Program.
And I'll find out about the new German Fest at the Athenaeum. Plus, there's our calendar of events we call
What Do We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Author Larry Swayze has been given an author's dream, a four-book deal from Berkeley Books for his Josiah Wolf Texas Ranger series. The first of the books, Rattlesnake Season, comes out on October 6th. Travis DiNicola spoke with Swayze about the new series.
Larry, welcome to Art of Matter. It's a pleasure to have you in our studio today.
Thanks for having me, Travis.
And congratulations on the upcoming publication of your first Western and another one coming out in the spring. This is, I guess, it's got to be a quite exciting time for you.
It's very exciting. The second one comes out in April. It's called The Scorpion Trail. And this is the beginning of a series.
And the series is the Josiah Wolf series. He's a Texas Ranger. And the first book, Rattlesnake Season, the one that actually gets released on October 6th, you must be a fan of Westerns, I'm guessing. I mean, this just doesn't come about naturally.
Yeah, I love Westerns. Being a child of the 60s, you turned the TV on all three stations back then. There was Bonanza and mm-hmm. the Virginian and the Big Valley, so it's all comes from that seed, I think.
Sure.
When I got older, of course, Westerns kind of went to the wayside, and mysteries and crime dramas and all those things kind of came up, and then as I got older, I kind of went back to where I started, so...
When you were a kid, were you also, in addition, watching them on TV, as we did you also read a lot of Westerns, or?
I read, Jack London. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not your classic Western, but it's Adventure in the West, which is what I really like. Hmm. And in my teen years through high school, probably, A.B. Guthrie, and I read Shane.
Sure.
With Jack Schaefer, by Jack Schaefer, so... So yeah, I did do some reading, but as I got older, and then I went into science fiction and fantasy and mysteries, and I've really explored all the genres, but I really think the seed starts with those TV shows.
And it's interesting to say that I love Jack London's work, a big fan of those. And when I first heard about your work as a writer, I thought, yeah, this will be kind of fun. I don't actually personally have read a lot of mysteries. I'm sorry. I read a lot of Westerns. I do read a lot of mysteries. And I was thinking, I don't know if I've had the opportunity to interview, many authors, novelists, historical fiction, nonfiction, mystery writers, but I'm not sure I've ever had a chance to interview a writer of Westerns. And so I was very intrigued by that. I've started to read your book, and as I have to admit, I haven't read the whole thing yet, Rattlesnake Season, but certainly the land... plays a big part of the story, as with a Jack London book and the trials that people go through. Tell me a bit about why you chose to set your Westerns in Texas. I mean, there's certainly a wide range of history and geography to create a Western in.
Sure. The only other place that I've lived besides Indiana for any length of time is Texas. I lived in Austin and Dallas-Fort Worth area for probably a total of 5 years, 4 or 5 years. So I got to know, the geography a little bit. I got mm-hmm. to know the people a little bit. And even then, you'd see a Texas Ranger and you'd kind of, your curiosity was piqued because they carried themselves differently.
Mm-hmm.
So when it was time to write my Western, which the interesting thing is set in 1874, and if it was set on the east side of the Mississippi, it would be called historical fiction. Now, because it's set on the west side of the Mississippi, it's a Western.
So the Mississippi is the dividing line.
It is, which is a real interesting categorization of the genres.
Huh.
But back to Texas, I mean, I started this. I knew I was going to write a series, and it was very apparent to me, and I knew I was going to write a Texas Ranger. So I wanted to start at the very beginning of the Frontier Battalion, when the Texas Rangers really became into official being.
Mm-hmm. This is a big part of your work. I mean, sort of, this is a real turning point, sort of, in the history of the Texas Rangers. I mean, in terms of historically, you know, how much power and authority do they have? There's a lot of interesting background in the politics of what was happening in Texas that, honestly, as I started reading, I'm like, this is a Western? I mean, it's really more like kind of a political thriller here. But.
Thank you. That's a great compliment. There was a lot of politics going on, and there was a lot of, you know, there was the panic of 1873, where there was a lot of crazy stuff going on with the railroads and the economy tanked. And while I was writing this book,
mm-hmm.
we were going through the panic and the whole, you know, downturn in the last year and a half.
Sure.
So, and it all felt very relevant to me. No regulation, and then the change in politics, because in Texas you had Governor Koch came in and kind of pushed out the old way. It was kind of the end of Reconstruction mm-hmm. at that period. So it was kind of like a new beginning for the state and for the South and for the country. So there's a lot going on there. And to put my little guy who lives in his little cabin with his, you know, his drama amidst all of that, he finds himself in you know, a lot of deep.
Well, and I want to talk about your character in just a minute, but it is kind of interesting to me that, you know, I guess, you know, sort of, I had this notion that a typical Western is sort of about the appeal of it is almost the lawlessness that's out there, and but yet in your work it's almost about sort of these different competing visions of what the law is going to be, in fact. So it's a very interesting approach.
Well, I wanted to, the one thing that I really like about writing in a genre, I always mm-hmm. compare that to playing on a tennis court.
Uh-huh.
You can put Andre Agassi on there and he's going to bring his own flair to the game, or John McEnroe. I want to play by the rules, but at the same time, I want to put my own flair, my own take on the genre. So I didn't want to walk in. I didn't want to write a book that was just bang, bang, shoot 'em up, violence for no reason. That's not the West to me. The mm-hmm. West is about second chances. It's about a new beginning. It's about all of these competing American visions
mm-hmm.
That brought us to where we are today.
Yeah, certainly much more complicated than I think most people maybe realize.
Absolutely. You know, and political correctness didn't exist in 1874.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there, you know, there was a lot of stuff going on.
Now tell me about your character, Josiah, is that right?
Josiah Wolf. Yeah.
And so he's, this guy's had a hard time. He's had a rough life already when we first meet him. I mean, it's not been easy for him.
No, it's not. He's a Civil War veteran, which was the case with a lot of those guys. So he's early to mid-30s.
Uh-huh.
He's come back. In those days, they called it soldier's heart. Today, we call it post-traumatic stress disorder. So he came back a little shattered from the Civil War experience, as most everybody did. But he came back physically intact. He got married, lived on his farm, had three daughters, and then in a swoop, he's a marshal of a town. The town kind of dies up, and his daughters are lost to influenza, one right after the other.
Mm-hmm.
And then his wife is pregnant, and she dies in childbirth with his newborn son. So he's left essentially as a 33, 34-year-old man.
Single dad, right?
Single dad to care for his son and make a living at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he had been a ranger in a kind of an unaffiliated way prior to this, and he'd been a marshal. So one of the rangers, the captain that he rode with, wanted him to come back, and he had to make that choice whether he was going to join the Frontier Battalion and become a part of the new Rangers and leave his son behind with essentially a wet nurse and start that life. And the son is, you know, is his driving force now. It's his reason to live.
Yeah. And it, once the story really, you know, it gets going, it's complicated by the fact that the guy that he's brought back to escort is someone who actually used to be friends with. They served together and obviously went very different paths.
Right. They were in the Texas Brigade together, the 1st Infantry, which these guys were the best of the best. They first in to battle, last out. So Josiah learned, he came back kind of broken, and where Charlie Langdon came back not knowing any rules. He'd gone in to kill, and he'd learned how to kill, and when he came back, that's what he continued to do. So they have a history together.
Yeah.
And Josiah knows Charlie's ways and respects them greatly.
Tell me a bit about how you research a work like this. I mean, something that's, you know, set 130, almost 140 years in the past, in a very different time, a very different place.
Sure. The first thing I did is I started reading journals that actual Rangers from the Frontier Battalion wrote. James B. Gillett is the first place anybody would start. A lot of that, because that's what you're going to get, the language, you're going to get the cadence of voice, you're going to learn how they talked. And you have to consider that even though this was the West, that it was still a Victorian era. So there was a big emphasis on language. You're used to seeing hey, pard, and all that. And that existed. But there was a lot of factions that were more proper, that were proper, and they wanted speech and letter writing was, you know, that they didn't have email, of course, and
right,
that kind of thing. So, but the journals were big. My time in Texas really helped.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to put a tree in there, it can't be the tree. It has to be the right tree in the right place. It has to be the right bird in the right place, the right hawk in the right place. So as you're writing a scene, if I move from East Texas to San Antonio, well, the bird life, depending on that time of year, is going to change. So I check not today's patterns, but I try to go back and see what existed in 1874 as far as records go for the birds. So it's you know, one little scene can create 6 or 7 hours of
What about things like trying to understand the experiences you're writing about in terms of just, you know, riding horses or using antique firearms or things of that nature? Are you do you ride yourself? Or?
I do ride, but not regularly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a horse guy, and I'm really not a gun guy. I mean, I have my experience with guns in the military. I was a military police, security police in the Air Force. I've carried a gun. Very, very respectful of them, and I have my own curiosities about them, but I'm not over the top. But I want to make sure and get all that stuff right. So the great thing with me is I've been involved with Western Riders of America for several years, and I know guys that are the experts.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So if I have a question about the Winchester 73 and how it felt and how it handled, I can either call them up and they can tell me where I can go feel it, or they can give, you know, and the same with horses and the same with some of the Spanish stuff that I used. So,
well, I want to ask you sort of where this is all going now. You're fortunate enough that you signed a two-book contract, and so Rattlesnake Season, which comes out just in a couple days, and then Scorpion Trail, which comes out in April. Where's Scorpion Trail taking Josiah Wolf?
Can
you give us a little hint?
Sure. It takes him into battle with the Comanche and the Kiowa. So there's a lot more Indian contact, which is why the Frontier Battalion was created in the first place, was to really, you know, quell the Indian uprising in Texas, which, you know, historically it took about 18 months. And after the Rangers took that on, they pretty much calmed it down.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot more Indian contact, and, you know, finding out what happens with his son and how he continues to evolve on his personal journey. That's always going to be part of my work. The character is always first with me, I think, over plot.
Travis DiNicola with author Larry Swayze. The first book of his Josiah Wolf Texas Ranger series is titled Rattlesnake Season, and it'll be released on October 6th with a party at the Mystery Company Bookstore in Carmel at 7 p.m. Swayze will also be making appearances at schools, other bookstores, and at the BoucherCon World Mystery Convention. To learn more about Swayze and to get his complete appearance schedule, visit LarryDSwayze.com. LarryDSwayze.com. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Jenkins is now the chair of Ball State University's Department of Theater and Dance. However, Jenkins made his BSU theater debut as a theater major at the university in the 1990s. Matthew Soucy spoke with Jenkins about his leap from student to chair. In full disclosure, Soucy and Jenkins were classmates at Ball State, so all stories about their shenanigans have been edited out of this broadcast.
Now, Bill, when you went to Ball State, you were a theater major?
I was indeed. I graduated with a degree in 1995 as an acting major.
As an acting major?
Yes.
Did you have any aspirations of administrative type work?
Actually, my role to being the department chair is kind of an odd one. I started off as a faculty member. When I graduated from my graduate degree program, I went to the University of North Dakota for a year and taught directing and had gotten my degree in directing, my MFA. And then when I went back to Ball State, I started off coordinating the musical theater program. And my predecessor, Don LaCasse, had moved to Illinois State University, and they asked me as a sort of untenured assistant professor to take over for a year. And I said I'd do it for a year. And through a lot of good fortune and luck, through the process of that year transition, temporary position, they asked me if I'd apply for the full-time position, and I did, and have been very lucky ever since.
And you've been doing it how long?
This is actually starting my seventh year as department chair at Ball State.
And you still have a three in your age.
I do indeed, yes. Actually, a three and a number that's not above five, so that makes me happy.
Let's not forget, you also worked, you did a little bit of administrative work. We saw you behind a desk at Ball State, I think.
Well, yeah, a long time ago. I used to, you know, when I was a student, I would work in the main office, but It's evolved a little bit now. Now I know the now I'm hiring the students who work behind the desk in the main office. But it's been a great experience, and certainly Ball State's been very good to me, and I love the program and love the students.
And it's grown considerably. I know, especially in the transition from Don LaCasse to you, bigger than ever before.
Yeah, we're actually the largest undergraduate program not only in the state, but we're actually one of the largest undergraduate programs in the entire country. We have 400 theater and dance majors and majors. And then if you add minors into that, it's about another 125. So it's about 525 students total. So it's pretty unbelievable, considering that when I was a student there back in 1991, I think, when I first started, I think there were about 120 theater majors total. So it's certainly the theater and dance program has grown exponentially over the time that I've been there.
And how often have you seen all 500 plus?
I know, yeah.
It's been a few weeks.
We actually had a meeting at the beginning of the year in which we have everybody in university theater, and now nobody really fits. So we put all the faculty and staff on stage and have the students sit in the aisles, and we take a picture at the end, and that's usually a large process to get all those people in the picture. But it's pretty impressive to see all of them at the same time.
Now, when you first got the position, you had some of your teachers who were now working for you. I see you have all your fingers.
I do indeed, yes. Actually, they're still now my colleagues, but several of the people that I had as teachers while I was a student are actually now colleagues with me in the department, and everybody has really been tremendous in terms of not, you know, sort of holding that against me in some way.
Not calling you Doogie or
no,
anything.
No, but it's been very nice and in terms of their kindness towards me and their respect of me as a teacher and an artist.
Now, as an actor, I know in high school and in college, did you ever play anybody your own age?
No.
Eleanor and the Gentleman from Summer and Smoke.
Yeah, I still don't, actually. I'm still the guy that you call upon if you need somebody who's, you know, in their 70s or 80s. Was born out of the womb with a sweater vest. So I guess that sort of explains it. But no, I tend to play a lot of older characters. I think I have a very old soul. So
yes.
That's tended to
yes,
be my
do.
Lot in life.
I want to talk a little bit about the season, but first I want to say last season you folks closed with the full Monty.
We did indeed, yes.
How full was the Monty?
It was the full Monty. And we had it was a tremendous production that the kids did very, very well. You know, the acting and musical theater programs have now moved to BFA programs, or Bachelor of Fine Arts programs, which is new in the last couple of years. And as an example, this year we've got a total of 30 students that are in the BFA acting and the BFA musical theater program, and I think of those 30 students, they represent about 17 states. So it's pretty unbelievable the national sort of recruitment that's gone on. But the full Monty was an excellent example of that. I mean, all of the kids in the show, you know, all of the leads and significant people in the show, you know, were from all over the country. And so it's been really exciting to see that the quality of the shows escalate as the quality of the students have continued to go up. And that's a real testament, I think, to the faculty, the staff, and to our tremendous alums that we have.
Now, I ask that because, and I'll get to the first show of the season, but when you knew you guys were going to do the full Monty, as an administrator, do you have to go to the dean? I mean, what if you didn't get a call saying, you're doing what?
We did not, and I think I think your question's leading to the first show of our season this year, which
yes.
is another little musical called Hair. Which also has some.
How hairy will it be?
It will be hair. And you can't do hair without the scene at the end of Act One, which is
also,
obviously
some productions have done that.
Yes, we won't be doing hair without the scene at the end of Act One. You know, I think that Ball State is really been great about understanding the artistic necessity of doing certain shows. I mean, we're balancing Hair Off with My Fair Lady in terms of our season, so it's not like we're selecting pieces that are all very, shall we say, cutting edge. We certainly are doing traditional pieces with that cutting edge stuff, but I think Hair is going to be a great way to lead off the season, and already we've had the box office open for just a couple of days, and it's already been nuts, mayhem, people trying to get tickets for it.
So My Fair Lady is following Hair?
My Fair Lady is the spring musical.
Oh, the spring musical.
Yes.
Okay, I would say, whew, that's...
Yeah, no.
So you're going to start with Hair.
Our main stage season is we do six shows on the main stage, and then we do a studio season of four shows in our Strother Theater, which is our small studio black box space. On the main stage season, we're leading off with Hair, and then we'll be following that up with Noises Off, which is, if you don't know that show, it's just a hilarious farce that is really, I think, going to be a crowd pleaser. Then we'll be following that up with our first performance of our dance, Ball State Dance Theater, and this year Ball State Dance Theater for their fall concert will be doing an evening of Gershwin on a cold winter's night, which will be saluting the music of George Gershwin and Cole Porter. And then the spring semester we'll be leading off with Shakespeare's Macbeth, followed by My Fair Lady, and then we'll be finishing the season with a dance concert entitled An Evening with the Arts, which is all dance that is inspired by works of art. So I think it'll be a really exciting season. I think it's one that will sell very well, but I also think it's got great challenges in it, not only for our students and our faculty, but also for the audiences in terms of their eclectic tastes will be challenged with, you know, something like Macbeth can, you know, countered with Hair. So. And then in our black box space, we're doing another great, you know, lineup of shows. We're leading off with a play. Actually, the musical that we're doing in the fall semester in the black box is Little Women, the musical, which is important because it's also bringing a guest artist in who actually was the lead in Little Women on Broadway, which I'll tell you in just a second. We're also doing a play entitled Intimate Apparel by Lynn Nottage, which is a great mm-hmm. piece directed by our faculty member DeWander Lampkin, and it's, I think, a piece that ultimately audiences will enjoy a great deal. And then we're also doing a play called God's Ear, which was done off-Broadway a couple of years ago. And it's a new play by Jenny Schwartz, and I think it's a play that audiences will like. It's a serial comedy that is really really out there, but, again, challenges our students. And then finally, we're doing a piece that it was actually written by our students and a faculty member entitled The Women of the Manhattan Project. Ball State has a real focus on immersive learning, which is, I'm sure you've seen many of the commercials, but it's where students get an opportunity to not only, you know, go to classes and learn from those experiences, but also to put that classroom work to full benefit in real-life situations. And a bunch of our students went to Minneapolis this summer to the Playwrights Institute, along with the faculty member Jennifer Blackmore, and they wrote a play based on the women who are part of the Manhattan Project. And this piece is actually being looked at by Samuel French for publication, and a colleague of our friend of you and I, Ken Dingledine, who works for Samuel French, mm-hmm. Who's a Ball State graduate, has been looking at the play and has been a part of that process. So we're real excited. I think it's a season that people are really going to be excited to come and see. I think that there's a lot of stuff not only for the entire family, but also for folks who are really interested in the classics with Macbeth, or if you're interested in newer plays in our Black Box series.
Now, has it been decided how Macbeth will be done this year, or is that too early?
We are still looking at that. I think it'll be done probably from a contemporary standpoint. That's my guess. We have two faculty members who are co-directing it. Wendy Mortimer, who is a coordinator of our acting program, and Drew Vidal, who's one of our acting teachers, is also a fight combat guy, and he's pretty terrific. And so I think the two of them are going to work on that. The other thing I was going to mention that I had mentioned Little Women earlier, mm-hmm. we've got a great guest artist coming in this year. Broadway superstar Sutton Foster will be coming to campus. She'll be coming from January 26th through January 30th. For those who don't know, Sutton Foster is a four-time Tony nominee and Tony winner for Thoroughly Modern Millie. She also was nominated for her work in Shrek recently this past year, and also Little Women, which I mentioned already, and also The Drowsy Chaperone. So mm-hmm. she has had a quite an experience as a Broadway performer over the last 7 years. She's going to come to campus for a week of workshops for our students, and there'll also be a public Q&A with her on Saturday, January 30th at 7:30 up in Sursa Hall, which is our main music performance hall up at Ball State. And I think it would be a great opportunity for people who are really interested in musical theater, especially, to come and listen to her speak.
Now, pause. I hear the theater community scribbling frantically on their calendars right now.
Yes.
And squealing.
Yes. Let me repeat that one more time. It's Saturday, January 30th at 7:30 p.m. at Ball State. The best part about it is it's free to the public, and so it's a great chance to not only come up and hear Sutton Foster, but also, if you've not visited Ball State recently, you really should. It's the growth on campus is pretty unbelievable.
Indeed.
And actually, what's happening on the campus in terms of the students and the quality of the programs and faculty and all of the things occurring in Muncie is pretty astronomical, especially if, like you and I, we went to school there and got to experience Ball State back in the day before it is what it is now. So
the technology and
technology things. there's lots of technology money, lots of focus on, like I said, immersive learning and emerging media, and a really it's a tremendously vibrant campus and a great place to go to school.
And are shows still being done in the basement, in the pit?
We do have a place called The Cave, right.
The Cave.
The Cave is actually a space that is a student-generated space. We now have at Ball State, we have seven different options for students to choose in terms of their academic experience. We now have something called the production option, which is specifically for directors and stage managers. And it's a major that students go through. And students who are in the production option in their third year can petition to direct in The Cave. This year we're doing a series of plays by a gentleman by the name of George F. Walker. Mm-hmm. And the series is called Suburban Motel. And all six of the shows that are being done this year in The Cave are all basically long one acts, about an hour and 10 minutes each, of plays that take place in the same motel room over a series of nights. So there's several of them in the fall semester and in the spring semester that really, you know, range from really dark comedy to some tremendously serious and really challenging pieces for our young actors and young directors.
And on the same set?
On the same set.
So economic-wise, that's nice.
Yeah, it's a great way for the students to not focus on all of the things like technical, you know, my set, my lights, my costumes.
Or trying to cram a house into a cave space.
That's exactly right.
That's another story for another time.
Yeah, it's a great way for them really to focus on the acting and just the storytelling, which we're excited about.
Now, I know occasionally at Emmons, they will bring in touring shows. I know that's, I think, a little different from you guys, but do you have any say as far as shows like that?
We have some faculty members who are on that committee. I know Emmons brings in some pretty good shows this year. I think Avenue Q's coming to campus. Drowsy Chaperone was there last year. They bring some good Broadway shows in addition to bringing some concerts up there. I know in the past, I think they've got... I think Air Supply maybe is coming this year, and so they bring in some you know musical groups in addition to the Broadway productions. But we have faculty who are on that committee, but we don't necessarily we're not a part of that process.
But that's also I think another experience for students.
Absolutely, yes. And we also have a wonderful music events that are happening over in our new music building. And there's a vibrant theater community going on in Muncie, and I know a lot of people go, Muncie, but I'm telling you, if you haven't been up there recently, it's a really a lot of things going on, and especially on the campus. The arts is really important, and this year, actually, at the Cornerstone Center for the Arts in downtown Muncie, they're hosting the Governor's Arts Awards, and that's happening, I believe, on September 25th, Friday. And so that'll be a great way for some people who are involved in the arts, even in Indianapolis, to come on up to Muncie and see what's happening.
Matt Sosi with Bill Jenkins, chair of Ball State University's Department of Theater and Dance. Ball State University's Department of Theater and Dance season begins with Hair, which runs through Saturday, October 3rd. You can go to bsu.edu/theater for the entire season schedule.
Way to get into it.
Cool.
All right.
I'll follow your lead.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
Have you been practicing drinking German beer?
As often as possible.
I'm so proud of you. We have some German things that are coming up still on today's show and on our calendar segment that we call What Do We Do?
But are they germane?
Oh.
Oh.
Well, if you like Beethoven and beer, this one is. Are you ready for this?
Okay.
It's the first annual Beethoven and Brew. It's a fundraiser for the American Pianists Association, and it's this Sunday afternoon and evening from 5 till 8. It's in the Rathskeller Beer Garden at the Athenaeum, and you're going to hear about more German things coming up at the Athenaeum in an interview that Travis is about to do here on the air. But this about this fundraiser thing, you can take a trip to Bavaria at the Rathskeller, tour the region with 8 different beers, a German buffet, and, of course, the music of Beethoven played by Philip Salmon. It's all a fundraiser for the American Pianists Association. Again, it's coming up this Sunday from 5 to 8. Call the APA and see if you can still grab a ticket for that. Beethoven and Brew, first annual.
There you go. There's a lot of good theater going on this weekend that I want to mention. A couple things. One going on at the Phoenix Theater. Dos Fallopia, which is a sketch comedy. Actually, the full title is Dos Fallopia, Deja Vu, the undeniably eerie feeling that you've seen this crap before. With a title like that, how can it not be good? Features two women doing sketch comedy at the Phoenix Inn. It's only there, actually, just this weekend, sort of a special presentation, which is really kind of fun. And then there's also a show that's opening at the Indie Fringe building. This is not the regular Fringe Festival, that was in August, but a show with an actor named Jack Freiberger, who actually I'm going to interview on Are the Matter next weekend. He's got a one-man show called They Call Me Mr. Fry. He's a school teacher and an actor, originally from Indianapolis, now living in California, and doing a show about public education. So that's going on this weekend and the next couple weekends at the Fringe.
Very fun. You know, if you're hearing us on Friday night, you might be in the car on the way to First Friday Gallery Walk along and around Mass Ave. We're at the Harrison Center, or maybe you're over at the Stutz. If you're hearing us on Saturday, I want you to know the visual art isn't over just because it's not First Friday night anymore. There's a new exhibition comprising the work of 10 Stutz artists who use photography in the creation of their art. It's called The Artful Lens, and the media includes silver photography, digital photography, photo transfers, historic processes, photo etchings, and paintings that incorporate photography. And this is going on at the Stutz Art Space, which is the nonprofit visual arts center on the first floor of the Stutz Business Center. So you can pop in for an opening reception if you're hearing us on Friday night, or go just look at the art if you're hearing us on Saturday afternoon.
There you go. Hey, some more theater I want to mention. The IRT is opening up their season with Heavens Hung in Black, which is about Abraham Lincoln. And then if you're looking for something a little bit lighter, a little bit more traditional in some ways, perhaps a Shakespearean comedy like Comedy of Errors, being directed by Brad Wright down at University of Indianapolis. This is what's opening up their theater department season. And Sharon, you ready for this? Comedy of Errors, set in 1960 Cuba.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Just that alone makes me want to
That's
go see it.
Intriguing.
A really fun play. It opens this weekend, and it runs also the 15th through the 17th as well at the Randsburg Auditorium down at University of Indianapolis.
Excellent. Here's a bit of a road trip if you're looking for a reason to go to Chicago. Well, you don't have to look too hard for a reason to go to Chicago, do you? But if you like antiques, the Merchandise Mark International Antiques Fair is going on this weekend, Friday through Sunday. So if you like antiques, that's a great place to see lots and lots of them. Take your debit card or credit card with you. That's going on at the Merchandise Mart in Chicago this very weekend.
If you're looking for something to do on Tuesday night.
Yeah,
Tuesday. Well, it's Music for the Mind. Music. It's NAMI's annual fundraising event. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and this is the Indiana chapter, and they are featuring Shannon Forsell, that great cabaret singer who's also running the Cabaret the Connoisseur Room, but she's going to be performing at the NAMI's event, and you can still get tickets. It's on Tuesday night, the 6th. Go to namiindy.org, namiindy.org.
Very good. Travis?
Yes, Sharon?
Are you hungry?
Always.
I want to tempt your taste buds. Cranberry bread pudding, pumpkin squares, persimmon bread.
This would go well with the German beer.
It would. Apple cupcake with cream cheese icing, mini pecan pies, or pecan if you're from the South, lemon tarts, and chocolate eclairs. And actually, there is a German connection. All of these are prepared by, catered by Chef Mike of the Indianapolis Propylaeum Club. What's the connection? One of the four German...
What's the connection?
It was one of the four German social and athletic clubs back in the day before they all got rebranded. But he is doing this for an event that is the Harvest Desserts event. It's on Sunday, October 11th. It's autumn-flavored desserts for sampling, and you can sample them at the President Benjamin Harrison Home. It's on Sunday, October 11th from 1 to 3. All of these desserts feature fruits and nuts harvested in autumn. And again, they're prepared by Chef Mike of the Indianapolis Propylaeum Club. And included in this event is a tour of the first floor of the mansion at 1230 North Delaware Street. President Harrison himself will be on hand not only to sample the Harvest desserts, but to greet guests.
Wow.
Yummy.
That sounds great.
It does.
Very, very good. Hey, another home worth checking out is the 2009 Indianapolis Monthly Dream Home, which,
ooh,
yeah, now this is a benefit for the Dyslexia Institute of Indiana, and this year the Dream Home is actually a dream condo. It's the top of the new three-mass building. If you've seen them building it at the corner of sort of Delaware and Mass Avenue,
yeah,
it's the huge new building.
Looks like a ship.
Yes, it looks like a ship, sort of across from Basbo's and Front Page down
mm-hmm.
there. It's just such a neat building. I've heard the views are fantastic and the layouts are great. Well, you can tour it starting on October 10th through the 18th, and you can get tickets at Marsh and all the proceeds go to Dyslexia Institute. They're even doing a patrons preview party actually coming up on Thursday the 8th, where you get to have cocktails and a buffet in the Dream Home as well. But anyways, check out the information at dyslexiaindiana.org.
You know, Travis, I'm kind of sad that we are no longer in our old building with the squeaky, creaky door. You know why?
Why is that?
I need a sound effect for this next item. I need... Well done. That was either a squeaky door or a cat who's hungry.
It started out as a door and became a cat, I think. But, you know.
Occupational hazard for those,
doing what
of
I can here.
Those of us who host felines at our homes. What is the event? It's the Tomb of Doom, Quest for the Lost Mummy. It, of course, is the Children's Museum's haunted house. They've been doing this, believe it or not, this is the 46th year for this. It opens on October 16th, continues through Halloween, and tickets are online already. You can also purchase them at Marsh supermarkets. And don't forget, it's not one event, it's a range of events, including lights on hours for the little tiny kids so they don't get too scared. And by the way, you can go to the Children's Museum haunted house without a child.
You can. They let you do that.
They do.
Hey, last thing I want to get in real quick is, speaking of scary things, Scary Stories for Families on the Canal next Friday the 9th at 7:30. It's brought to you by Storytelling Arts. That should be a lot of fun as well. It's taking place at the History Center. We will be back with more scary things, I'm sure, to do next week on
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Saturday, October 10th, we'll bring German cars, German music, German beer, and German food to the Athenaeum downtown for their first original and fabulous German Fest. But as Travis DiNicola found out from the Athenaeum Foundation's president, Cassie Stockamp, the real treat is going to be the Wiener Dog Race.
So what is the original and fabulous German Fest? Now, correct me if I'm wrong, it's the first year, so...
Yeah, but...
We know it's going to be fabulous, right?
And we will, hopefully it will become an annual event. What is it? It is an opportunity for us to pull all the German groups together for a single event. And working with Sven Schumacher, who is the German consul, and several other leading German organizations, we actually... all the German groups got in the room at one time, which I understand hasn't happened because, and I'm German, so I can say mm-hmm. this with great affection. The old adage is, if there's two Germans in a room, you have three clubs. So
But everyone was there. I think that's obviously not true today. But they all are participating, whether by having a booth, bringing their cultural pieces in, having singing groups or dancing groups. And truly, it's an opportunity just to celebrate everything German.
And this is an all-day indoor, outdoor, family-friendly event. You've got everything from Volkswagens to the Beatles and beer, right?
And yodeling contests and wiener dogs and you name it. We're working with Ray Compton. And, there you go.
I love the logo you guys have been using for the German Fest with the two little wiener dogs.
That was great. Yeah. It was so fun. I mean, I think that in and of itself is a great caricature. We're working with Ray Compton and his staff, and as you know, they have been very instrumental in many different events throughout the city. So they are creative, and candidly, it has just been fun to watch these guys go and just take on this organization. So, you know, we're trying to attract people downtown on Mass Ave, number one. I mean, that is obviously something you and I both are very fond of. But also then, how do we create allegiance to this, a brick building? I keep going back to you. We're just a brick building, but it has such history, such significance.
The Athenaeum. Also known as the A.
The A, that is a new one. Thank you very much. So how do we create a loyalty to this old building? And there are wonderful festivals and events downtown, as you and I both know. But there's nothing been truly German downtown. They've been kind of all scattered around, but it felt appropriate to do that down here.
Okay.
So.
And using, obviously, a building that's sort of been at the center of German heritage in our city.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
at the very forefront.
A century now, right? Almost?
Over 110 years. 1894 it was completed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is a wonderful historic structure.
Well, give me a bit of a rundown of what's going to be happening at German Fest. Who's going to be there?
Sure. It's going to start at noon. And, again, we're going to have two stages. Again, food vendors, as you mentioned, family-friendly activities going
on
throughout the day. Lots of brats, lots of beer. German pastries, big pretzels, you classic. So not only we're going to be closing down New Jersey Street, and then the booths will be up and down that part of the street, and we'll have stages positioned at both ends. Everything from the Manicor will be singing to the Athenaeum Pops will be playing in the beer garden to Young Actors Theater to the Liederkranz will be dancing. Again, we're going to be having yodeling contest.
I mean, will there be yodeling instruction?
There will be instruction, and then we'll all participate. So it will be we all need to come and learn how to yodel.
You've been working on that?
Not right now. Thank you very much.
Okay.
So yodeling, again, I'm just laughing. The wiener dog contest, I guess, is going to draw more dogs than we can.
Now is this like a show or is this a race?
It could be a race.
They're just racing wiener dogs? They can run?
That's kind of the joke, I guess, right? These crazy things pull in over 100 dogs. I'm just giggling because it's just...
I've got to see the wiener dog race.
Exactly.
So, and I know that look at your schedule. That's at 2:00. There's admission to the event?
No, it's free this first year.
It's totally free, absolutely. So you can go down now. Of course, you got to pay for drinks and food and stuff like that. But
Just come down and have a great time. So there'll be activities throughout the entire day. So it really is a two-prong event in that we have the family-friendly event during the day, and the evening then, and frankly, we're doing this because we have to pay for the event, is we're doing the fundraiser, bringing in the Beatles tribute band, which we had planned even before this big everything Beatles has come up across the country. And the Stones magazine says that this band is the top tribute band in the country. So
now, in the Beatles tribute band, you do have to pay for that.
It's $125. It's a truly a fundraiser for us, which includes obviously the band itself, a silent auction, dinner, and an open bar for an hour.
Cool. Okay,
so.
But I really like the format that you're working with here, that it's free during the day, easy for families to do. Come have a great time, stay all day. If you want to come and stay for the whole night also and hear the big band and the Beatles band, the tribute band, and then be part of all the other fundraising events, you can do both.
Absolutely.
Or you can just do one or do the other.
Right.
Okay, so the evening with this Beatles tribute band, and again, the name of the band?
1964
is the name of it.
1964, yeah.
That's when they first played in Hamburg, Germany, right?
I think that was Hello, when did they play in Hamburg?
Oh, that was even before that, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, sure. That was the formation. It was the formation of the actual Beatles. And
but that's why you're bringing them here.
Thank you. That is the connection.
64 is when they came here, but...
They had been in Hamburg for 7 years honing their craft.
Got it.
And from like 7 p.m. till 3 o'clock in the morning. And
right, playing the small clubs and stuff,
playing
right?
the small clubs and truly... even still today, Germany is a mecca for new bands. Mm-hmm. That people need to... They feel like they need to go and get the approval. The Germans have a fairly sophisticated palate. So, yeah, which is kind of fun.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. So, okay, so the band 1964 is playing, then it's a dinner, it's
dinner,
an auction.
Dinner, auction.
And this is taking place in...
The theater space.
In the theater, okay.
Again, since we have this open theater, trying to expose people to this beautiful space that we have as well. And the acoustics really are fun in that old building. And I know you've attended several events there, too. So it's a great space, and we need to start using it as a community gathering place for more and more of these kind of things.
Very neat. Well, this is really all, I mean, part of, even though this is one day, the 10th of October for the German Fest at the Athenaeum, it's really sort of just part of a larger outreach that you've been doing with the Athenaeum, with the different organizations there, whether you've got art exhibits now up on sort of the second floor and other events going on quite a regular basis, and even the idea of just meeting me at the A, that the A is sort of this, like, center of activity.
Good. Yeah, that's a very good point to bring up, Travis. We are trying to do really more of a branding initiative.
Mm-hmm.
And we love the Rathskeller. It is obviously an integral part of the community here. However, people know the name Rathskeller and don't necessarily know the name Athenaeum.
Okay.
So we are trying to create a branding effort, creating some loyalty to, again, the structure, which have these wonderful tenets. Because it is. It's fascinating when we realize that probably one of the oldest standing gymnasiums left in town is the Y, where it works out of. The oldest German restaurant in town is the Rathskeller. And the very first theater in town was our theater. The Germans brought dance and culture from that perspective into town. So it has a lot of historical significance.
Wow. And you're actually, I know, still looking for volunteers.
We'll take volunteers, absolutely.
People want to help out for, thank you. For German Fest or get their tickets.
They don't have to speak German.
They don't have to speak German. And I just also want to mention real quick that you have a show that has nothing to do with Germany, 5 days in Guatemala. That's an art exhibit that's going on at the Athenaeum right now.
And I both know
it
Casey.
Will be opening on the second. Yeah.
Exactly. And so that will be showing that time. People can go upstairs as well. She just won some awards. She spent, I think, a week or 2 weeks in Guatemala on a mission trip and has this beautiful display that she's going to be presenting upstairs in our art space. So... Yeah, that is. I'm really excited about that as well.
So lots of cool stuff going on at the A.
Busy building. There's a party every day in my building.
Hey, you know what? I almost forgot that we mentioned. There's actually a car parade too, right?
Thank you. There's going to be a Mercedes, possibly a Porsche, or not a Porsche. Excuse me, a VW parade as well. So yeah, some of the
Mercedes,
the German cars.
All the great cars.
Exactly.
Yeah,
there are a lot more than that, but those are
BMWs.
Yeah.
Well.
You're still laughing about the wiener dogs, aren't you?
Well, you know, I love the wiener dogs. I can't wait to see the wiener dog race again. And that's at 2 o'clock. I mean, there's a lot of other great stuff going on all day long at the German Fest, but wiener dogs at 2. Cassie, always fun to chat with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Travis.
Travis DiNicola with Cassie Stockamp, president of the Athenaeum Foundation. Their original and fabulous German Fest takes place on Saturday, October 10th at the Athenaeum at Michigan and Mass Ave downtown. Visit AthenaeumFoundation.com for more information. That's spelled AthenaeumFoundation.com.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4.
I'll chat with an actor and school teacher who's bringing his one-man show about public education to the Indie Fringe.
Matt Sosi joins us for an interview with music producer Richard Probst.
Plus, I'll find out what's going on at the Writers' Center with Barb Shoup. And, of course, we'll have our calendar of events we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 for The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter is made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and by grants from the Arts Council of Indianapolis and from the City of Indianapolis and by support from the Central Indiana Community Foundation, the Indiana Arts Commission, a state agency, and by the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.